Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Text God, Text and You Shall Receive, by Whitney Dineen and Melanie Summers, narrated by Avery Reed and Alexander Sendes. Introduction.
I finally told my parents I want to be an artist when I grow up. I tell my grandpa. In all of my 13 years on the planet, he's not only been my best friend, but my biggest champion as well. He buys all my drawings for $1 apiece, and every birthday and Christmas, he gives me art supplies before offering,
"Use it wisely, my girl. That stuff ain't cheap."
"Oh? How did that go over?"
Pops asked as his eyebrows crawl halfway up his forehead. Hunching my shoulders over so I can rest my chin on my knees, I watch as nasty old Mrs. Vetti's sedan comes dangerously close to running over our toes as she swerves toward the curb in front of St. Monica's Church, where, in a few minutes, my grandmother's funeral will start. I watch as she executes a wide turn into the parking lot, then cuts off a woman crossing the sidewalk with a stroller. For a second, I get distracted wondering what Graham would think of Mrs. Vetti showing up to her funeral in her fancy red hat. I'm pretty sure she would have hated that the old bag, as she used to call her, would be here at all. My heart squeezes in pain that Graham's really gone.
"Earth to Jenny. Come in, Jenny,"
Pops says, nudging me on the shoulder.
"What?"
"I was asking how it went when you told your parents what you want to do with your life."
"Right, sorry. About as well as you'd expect," I tell him. "Dad said I should either be a lawyer like him or an accountant, and Mom said, no, Bob, she should marry a lawyer or an accountant. Then she said I should really find myself a nice plastic surgeon who is willing to do work for his mother-in-law for free."
Pops snorts.
"Do either of those options sound like the life you want?"
I shake my head.
"No way."
"Good. As much as I love my daughter, she doesn't have the first clue what the secret to happiness is,"
Pops tells me. He's right about that. My mom is a miserably unhappy woman with no apparent dreams of her own.
"But you, Jenny, you've got a lot of wisdom for a young girl."
I stare up at his wrinkly face, noticing how tired he looks today.
"But I don't think I know the secret to happiness, Pops,"
I tell him, feeling embarrassed to admit it, especially after such a nice compliment.
"You've got to have faith, Jenny, in both yourself and in God. If you have that, you can be anything you want. With faith and hard work, the world will be your oyster."
"Jason Dixon in my class said God isn't real, and he's just something people made up to control the masses."
"Jason Dixon? Is he the one who got a bean stuck so far up his nose that he had to have surgery to get it out?"
I grin at the memory and nod.
"Enough said,"
Pops tells me. Then he sighs.
"I know God is real. I don't know what he looks like or if he's really a she or an it, but I believe in a higher power that governs the laws of the universe."
After a moment, he says,
"It would be a lot harder saying goodbye to Graham if in my heart I didn't know she was going to a better place."
I nod, feeling stretched in two directions. After all, if there is a God, why did Graham die and nasty old Mrs. Vetti is still here?
I'm not sure what I believe.
"Even though life isn't always fair, there are miracles everywhere you look."
Putting his arm around my shoulders and pulling me close, Pops says,
"Look at that tree."
He points to a magnolia in full bloom.
"That stunning creation all came from one seed, just one tiny seed."
"I know what you're saying, Pops, and I appreciate everyday miracles. I really do. But what about the really big ones? Does God even hear our prayers? If he does, I'm not sure he answers them." The questions and worries pop out of me like corn kernels simmering in hot oil. I prayed constantly when I found out Graham had a stroke, and she didn't make it. Nodding, Pops says,
We all did. It's impossible for us to understand why things happen the way they do. But when times are the hardest, it's comforting to believe God is kicking into overdrive for us. He may not answer our prayers the way we want, and we may not realize our prayers have been answered for a very long time.
Holding me close, he adds,
Never question whether or not God is talking to you, Jenny. You may hear a voice in your head or have an inkling in your heart, but when you ask for help, you're being heard, and you will get some kind of answer. You just have to believe.
And with those words, Pops stands up and reaches his hand out to me.
Come on, let's go in and give your Gram the send-off she always wanted.
After my grandfather helps me up, I dust off the back of my skirt and try to prepare myself for what I know will be the toughest hour of my life so far. I see Mrs. Vetti hurrying up the sidewalk with her usual scowl in place, and I have an urge to go stomp on her toe just for being alive. In my head, I say, Dear God, I don't know what I think about you, but I could really use a sign that you're real and that my Gram is okay. As I finish my prayer, a pigeon flies overhead and poops right on top of Mrs. Vetti's hat. I unsuccessfully try to stifle my laughter. I look up at Pops, whose shoulders are shaking. He starts making that wheezing sound he does when something is uncontrollably funny to him, and pretty soon the two of us are collapsed in a heap of giggles as Mrs. Vetti walks by, completely unaware of the poop on her hat. She gives us a glare, then strides past us without saying anything. We should stop laughing, I tell Pops, feeling momentarily panicked that my parents might come out of the church and see us.
No, we should not, Pops says. That was your Gram right there, giving us a good laugh and letting us know she's happy up there.
I grin up at Pops and nod. It was, wasn't it?
There's no other explanation. That was a small miracle, just for the two of us, he says. And if the big guy upstairs can facilitate Graham's ultimate revenge on Mrs. Vetti, I'm pretty sure there's nothing he can't do.
Chapter 1. Jen. Bending over in downward dog, I release the whoosh of breath I've been holding for what feels like the last 3 days. Then I have a stern talk with myself. It goes like this. Jennifer Flanders, you're an artist. You are a highly evolved soul who is temporarily off track. While dog walking isn't your dream job and picking up copious amounts of poop is not fulfilling in and of itself, you're lucky to have a job. And with such cute furry love nuggets who worship you unconditionally. With the exception of Brutus, of course, who loves nobody. Then, as I do, I answer myself. You haven't sold one painting since you moved to New York. Not one. Therefore, you can claim to be as advanced a soul as you want, but you are no artist. Back to positive me. Screw you! I went to art school for 3 years and apprenticed with Peony Parks. That's Peony Parks. Second only to Georgia O'Keeffe in matters of all things flowers and possibly girly bits. Those lilies do bring to mind something of a non-botanical nature. I am an artist no matter what you say. Negative me. Nope, not. La 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 la, I can't hear you. I'm as tense as the rubber bands that hold a tennis ball together. I gradually retreat out of my current yoga pose and move into a headstand. As the blood rushes to my frontal lobe, I pray to the universe for peace, strength, creativity, and either more clients or a better-paying survival job. I can't even afford new art supplies right now, and I've been told by every gallery that I've walked into that they don't want me coming back until I have something new to show them. For some reason, my mind drifts off to the morning of Graham's funeral. I remember Pops telling me that I need to ask for miracles and not to turn away from them when they happen.
Dear God, send me a sign, I plead. Just a little something to give me the strength to carry on.
Not a minute later, maybe not even 30 seconds later, my phone pings. Gently tucking and rolling out of my headstand, I strike a quick warrior pose and namaste my goldfish Frank before checking to see who texted. The yoga gods would probably prefer all electronics be banned during times of spiritual mind-body goings-on, but they aren't worried about eviction like I am. When I see who the text is from, I have to stop and rub my eyes before reading it again. Same result. I read, God. Word on the street is you need a little career guidance. Just wanted to let you know I'm here for you. What the... God is texting me? Is this some new Verizon service? Because if it is, what in the heck am I paying for it? With my finger hovering over the message bubble, I finally type back. Jay Flan. Thanks, God. One might think you'd be too busy to answer my call, but really, thanks. God. No sweat. I've been meaning to, but I guess it's true what they say about the road to hell being paved with good intentions. Anyhow, I'm in between meetings and thought I'd reach out.
God says no sweat? He's in between meetings? What the...
Jay Flan. I'm wondering if maybe you have an idea of how I could make some extra money. My rent just got raised, and it's going to be a tight one.
God.
Ask your family. Listen, I'm not one to kick a gift horse in the mouth or anything. I mean, I am currently texting with God and all, and according to Pops, I should not doubt this kind of communication. But wouldn't you think the big guy would know that my parents aren't planning to speak to me again until I give up my pie-in-the-sky dream of artistic glory?
That's a direct quote.
Jay Flan. That's not going to work in my case, but thanks for brainstorming with me.
God.
Okay then. I have another idea.
God.
...
God.
Go down to the Asher Hotel and tell them I sent you. They'll set you up with some extra work.
Jay Flan.
I'm sorry. You want me to go to the fanciest hotel in all of Manhattan and tell them God sent me?
God.
Nobody has called me God since high school. I go by Gabe now.
God goes by Gabe? And he went to high school?
Okay.
Jay Flan.
Who do I tell this to?
God.
Ask for the general manager, Tony Collins. He's a good guy. Tell him that the Christmas card he sent out this year was very thoughtful.
God gets Christmas cards? I'm so confused right now, I'm starting to suspect that I may have had a major stroke or heart attack and died. How else could I be talking to God?
Texting, actually.
Jay Flan.
Okay. I'll go down today. Would you mind if I texted you back afterward, just to let you know how it all went?
God.
Please. I'm free after 6, so if you don't hear from me until then, don't worry.
God is free after 6 today?
I wonder what would happen if I asked him to meet me for a drink. But seriously, though. After signing off with God, I scroll up to the beginning of the thread. How did God get my phone number? I mean, I'm sure he has access to all kinds of information. All the information, really. But still. Right above God's first text to me, it shows that I sent God a text. It says, "Thank you so much for offering to help me. It means the world." What the heck? I never texted anyone named God or, you know, God himself. How could that be on my phone? I pour a cold glass of water from the pitcher in the fridge and consider this while I scroll through my phone book to make sure God isn't one of my contacts. But when I get to the G section, he's right there. How? I never added him. Not that I could have if I'd wanted to. I put my phone down and decide that when you ask the universe for a sign, you need to welcome that sign and not question it. Negative me. This is insane, and it's never going to work. Positive me holds up one finger and sticks it in negative me's face like she's going to poke her eyes out. She says,
As insane as this whole thing is, I'm just going to go with it. I've got nothing to lose other than the subway fare. All I'm really doing is going to a hotel to apply for a job. If I get there and there's not a guy named Tony who has a friend named Gabe, so be it.
Negative me. You've officially lost it this time. For realsies. Positive me.
Zip it and let me have this one thing. I need a win.
I fling open the door of my closet and search for the perfect outfit. I wonder what God sees me doing at the Asher Hotel. Clearly, it won't be a position in management. I hope it's not a waitress gig. I wouldn't turn it down, but my friends Tisha and Amy have made serving food sound so depressing, I'm not sure my spirit could take it. I decide to put on a cute red dress that I've never had the occasion to wear. I bought it at a fire sale and was planning on using it at my first art gallery opening. Quickly brushing out my longish dark hair, I make the executive decision to keep it down. I don't want an updo messing with my chi or anything. After swiping 24K rows across my lips, I stand back and admire my gorgeous self. Positive me. Jen, not only do you look like the bomb diggity, but your good friend God is recommending you for a new job. Things are looking up. I grab my purse off the back of the sofa and make sure I have my Metro card. Please let there be enough left on it to get me downtown and back. Then I shove my phone into my handbag and head out to conquer the world. I pick up the subway at 103rd Street. I still have a few weeks to ride the subway before mid-July hits and the temperature rises to the point where the subterranean train system reeks of simmering urine. That's when I start walking. I walk my doggy clients so much anyway, I'll just bring them along on my errands. Of course, now that I'm about to accept a job at the swanky Asher, I might have to quit walking dogs. Well, that kind of makes me sad. I'll miss them. Even Brutus. Sort of. It doesn't upset me to the point where I would give up an opportunity to improve my lot in life. You can only eat top ramen so many times a week and still be grateful. The lady sitting next to me is bobbing her head along to the music that must be blasting through her earbuds. I don't have to wonder what she's listening to for long because she starts to belt out Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. She's singing with such fervor I can only assume that she was recently jilted. I send a silent prayer of good fortune her way. We've all been there, sister. A few other people give her a cursory glance, but no one seems too shocked, what with this being the NYC subway and all. I get off the train at Columbus Circle and cross the street to Central Park South, feeling light and optimistic. Any day that God texts you is a good day. Walking into the Asher is like setting foot on another planet. It is so far out of my daily experience, it isn't funny. 20 fancy stories tall, all overlooking Central Park. This place could pass for God's house. Not in a church sense, but, you know, his city pad. The lobby is chic and intimidating, so much that I almost turn around and leave. Marble floors, crystal chandeliers, and sumptuous, overstuffed furniture in dark burgundies and browns practically shout that paupers aren't welcome. I walk past a famous rock star, a famous model, and a socialite who I regularly see on Page 6, the New York Post gossip column. I have a bit of a thing for local gossip. I have this vision of learning about some famous person desperately searching for a shockingly colorful watercolor, and I'll be all, I know just where you can find one. Then I'll stalk them and get them to launch my career. It's like that Stevie Wonder and Ariana Grande song about faith, except in my case, I've got faith my success will evolve out of my dedication to Page 6. I wait my turn at the front desk behind two Japanese businessmen. An intensely stuck-up clerk smiles at me in a way that suggests he doesn't get enough fiber in his diet. When I walk up to him, he asks, May I help you? Smiling like fiber is my friend, I say, I'm here to see Tony Collins. Do you have an appointment? He asks coolly. I don't, but Gabe sent me.
I feel like I'm speaking in code and that I'm participating in some kind of cosmic drug deal.
Gabe who? He wants to know.
Gabe, how do I answer this without sounding insane?
Nothing's coming to me, so I say, God.
Gabe, God sent you?
Todd, I look at his name tag, picks up the phone. I'm assuming he's calling security and I'm about to be forcibly removed from the premises. I turn to leave before having to endure the humiliation when I hear him say,
Shane, it's Todd at the front desk. I have a young lady here to see Mr. Collins. She says someone named Gabe God sent her.
Wow, I'm not sure what I thought would happen. Obviously, I believed God this morning while texting him, but somehow hearing myself say that Gabe God referred me made me question the veracity of my earlier communication.
Todd smiles nicely now and says, Won't you please sit in the lobby? Mr. Collins will be over shortly.
I walk over to a very sumptuous brown leather sofa. I put my purse on the coffee table in front of me as a woman in an apron approaches.
May I bring you something to drink?
Oh, I'm not a guest here, I tell her. I'm waiting to meet with Mr. Collins.
Mr. Collins asked me to bring you a beverage of your choice while you wait. He'll be with you in just a moment.
She hands me a menu and waits while I give it a cursory glance.
Oh, hibiscus tea, my favorite. I'll be right back, she says.
Oh, no. I wasn't ordering a pot of $18 tea. I was just making small talk. Oh, dear. What do I do now? I don't have $18 on me. I try to flag her down, but short of yelling,
Yo, waitress lady, over here.
I don't have a chance of reaching her in time. She's practically sprinting away in her sensible black flats. In a panic-induced sweat, I do the only thing I can think of. I call my credit card company to make sure I have enough of a balance to cover a pot of $18 tea. I learned that I actually have $26 of available credit, so I'm breathing easier by the time my beverage arrives. That is, until I see the plate of pastries my waitress has brought with her. She can't expect me to pay for those, can she? I certainly didn't order them. Before I can ask her to take them away, a handsome man in his 30s walks up to me.
Hi there. Are you Gabe's friend?
I stand up in such a hurry I nearly launch myself at him.
I'm Jen Flanders.
What can I do for you?
He asks as he sits in a chair across from me, but not before grabbing what's probably a $40 scone off the plate.
Well, I was talking to Gabe this morning and was telling him that I needed a good job. He suggested I come down and talk to you.
Oh, right, okay. What position are you looking for?
I don't really know, but honestly, I'm not picky. I'll do anything.
My cheeks flush and I quickly say, Any regular hotel position that you need to fill. You know, anything that doesn't require a lot of job experience. I've been walking dogs while I concentrate on my artwork. I wonder if there's an opening for someone suffering from verbal incontinence. I'm not trained for anything to do with the hospitality industry.
We just lost someone at the front desk, so if that interests you, I'd be happy to hire you on a trial basis, he says. We'd pay you during training, of course.
My mouth hangs open like the hinge on my jaw just gave way.
That would be wonderful, I tell him before asking, Would you like me to fill out an application?
Not necessary. Any friend of Gabe's is a friend of ours. We'll need your social security card and address, of course, but other than that, you're good to go. Can you start tomorrow?
Absolutely, I can. And thank you, Mr. Collins.
He shakes my hand before telling me to report to the front desk tomorrow at 10. He starts to walk away when I ask,
One more thing.
I point to the spread in front of me.
Is there any chance I could get an employee discount for this?
Those are on me,
he says with a little wink before leaving me to my very posh afternoon tea. I snap a picture of all the delicious pastries and send it to God with the caption, I got a job at the front desk. I start tomorrow, and they comped me these. Can you believe it? Do you think I can sneak them into my purse? Also,
Thank you times a million. I sit back and sip my tea, wondering if there's any way I can slip all these pastries into my bag without anyone noticing. Who knew when I woke up this morning my fortunes would turn so spectacularly?
Chapter 2. Gabriel Oliver Daly.
"Well, look who the cat dragged in,"
my mom yells in her thick Irish accent as she rushes over to a table of tourists carrying a tray of Guinness. "It looks familiar, doesn't it?" my dad says, narrowing his eyes at me from behind the bar of their pub, the Salty Nuts Tavern, one of the most popular watering holes in Hell's Kitchen.
"Almost like that boy we raised years ago, the one who looked like me but acted exactly like his mother. A right terror. Gandalf, Genghis, wait," he snaps his fingers as though my name has just come to him. "Ah, Gabriel!"
I wave at him while I wait for my mom to empty her tray. "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been almost 3 weeks since I stopped by," I say, going for a contrite tone. The tourists grin at our exchange like they're part of some dinner theater production. Playing along, I offer a smile while my mom tells them,
"He's a fancy lawyer now, so he's too busy for the people who gave him life and kept him fed while he grew into the gorgeous lad you see before you."
She walks over and I give her a kiss on the cheek. "Hello, Mom, I like your hair. Did you do something different with it?" Different is a tame word for what she's got going on. She refuses to let herself go gray, yet she doesn't
see the sense in paying someone for something she can do herself.
She not only dyes her own hair, but she cuts it too. Today's look is a bright reddish-orange attempt at a pixie cut that resembles a cartoon character being electrocuted. She smiles and bats her eyelashes.
"Your da says I look exactly like a red-haired Jamie Lee Curtis now."
He's right, I agree, because why not let them live in their blissful state of illusion? One of the men at the table nearest us interrupts us with, "Hey, how come you don't sound like your parents?" "I grew up here," I tell him. My dad, who's clearly listening, calls,
"But he was born in Ireland. I made sure of that. He's as Irish as the Blarney Stone on St. Patty's Day." "Oh, you made sure of it, did you?"
my mom says, scowling in his direction before telling the tourists,
"The way he talks, you'd think he'd carved the boy from wood like Pinocchio."
"Don't get your knickers in a twist, Mary. It's not like anyone thinks I managed to have him on my own," he says.
My mom rolls her eyes, then gives the customers her standard line.
"If you need anything at all, don't hesitate to ask the five-haired grouch over there."
With that, she links arms with me, and we make our way to the bar. I walk around behind it and put my briefcase down, then pour myself a water.
"So, Bairn, I suppose you haven't bothered to call your sister lately?"
my mom says. The Irish are known for giving each other nicknames that don't make any sense unless you know the backstory. For example, my dad grew up with a kid called Bungalow, and they called him that because he had nothing upstairs. In my case, my entire family calls me Bairn, after the actor Gabriel Bairn, who apparently my mother has had a lifelong crush on. When my dad found out the real reason she'd pushed so hard for the name, he started calling me Bairn to tease her, and, oddly enough, it stuck. "I promise I'll call her this week," I tell my mom, making a mental note to do just that.
"Is Alexis meeting you?"
my dad asks, knowing full well she's not. My girlfriend and my parents don't exactly get on like a house on fire, to quote my mom. Whatever the hell that means. It's a bit of a sore spot between my parents and me, to be honest. I try not to bring her up around them because it occasionally leads to a blowout in which my mom makes it clear that she knows me better than I know myself and that I've got
no business settling down with a minus crack like her.
A minus crack is Irish for boring. The feeling is mutual, though. Alexis avoids my parents like they're planning to harvest her kidneys to sell on the black market. She and I met in our third year of law school, and even though I love her, they most definitely do not. She's a criminal defense lawyer, which doesn't go over well when a huge chunk of your family is made up of cops. Seriously, three of my uncles, eight of my cousins, and my sister Kira's husband all wear the badge. Not tonight, she's still working on that big case, I say, opening the fridge and crouching down to load a case of beer into it.
That murderer,
my dad spits. He's been charged with manslaughter, Dad, I answer.
Same thing, if you ask me, my mom says with a sigh. Oh, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's no kangaroo.
I grew up with insightful words of wisdom.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?